It's 19 hours 30 UTC on Sunday, November 25th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
I think Mr. Mnangagwa is in a bit of a fix. I think he's in big trouble because he has to satisfy a lot of people who are making a lot of demands.
That's analyst Tendai Bofana on the challenges of Zimbabwe's new government. Good evening, I'm Chidondrere.
And I'm Kutanai Matatwa on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. 10 years ago, live on air, Archbishop of York Johnson Tamu cut up his clerical collar and said, "As an African, an Anglican, this is what I wear to identify myself." He said Mugabe had taken people's identities and cut them to pieces. He said that from that time on, he was going to wear what he called a dog collar until Mugabe left office. During a BBC interview today, Archbishop Johnson Tamu was handed the pieces of that collar. He said that he would attempt to put this one back on, or he could try and put the pieces back together with superglue. He said the lesson for the country is the same. The new president can't simply stitch it up. He said something more radical, something new needs to happen in terms of the rule of law. This comes on the same day that the Zimbabwean Catholic Bishop Conference has written a pastoral letter that stresses the need for President Mnangagwa's government to focus on economic recovery and electoral reform in the short term. Father Frederick Chiromba, Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Catholic Bishops Conference, told VOA that the church sees people's everyday suffering. He said the laws need to include all Zimbabweans to make sure that the country does not go down the same path.
Observers say President Emmerson Mnangagwa has a lot on his agenda. That includes preparing for elections in the upcoming year and strengthening a declining economy. For more on the challenges ahead, the head of VOA's Zimbabwe service, Studio 7, spoke to Harare-based analyst Tendai Bofana. Ray asked him what lies ahead for the new government.
First of all, I think Mr. Mnangagwa is in a bit of a fix. I think he's in big trouble because he has to satisfy a lot of people who are making a lot of demands. A lot of people expect so much from him. First of all, I would say the Lacoste team itself, which I can say at the moment they've won this in-fight factional battle that was in ZANU-PF. So he has to please those people who enabled him within ZANU-PF to lead the party and the country. At the same time, I'm sure the military, there will be some military people there also who might be eyeing some government posts who are now no longer just being content as being military people, who might actually be putting pressure on him to also give them posts within the new government. And as we have heard from some quarters within the opposition, they are also pushing for him, not necessarily for a transitional government, for I think ZANU-PF has already made it clear that it's not constitutional at the moment to have a transitional government as they are pinning their hopes on an election next year in 2018. But they would be pressuring Mr. Mnangagwa to at least appoint a few of them into his cabinet.
We know historically that Mr. Mnangagwa does not really have the support of the people. He has lost elections before, like in 2000, he lost to Blessing Chobundu. What changed this time for them to be in support of Mr. Mnangagwa?
Quite honestly, Mr. Choto, that is a question that also baffles me. I really do not understand where the hope that people have placed on Mr. Mnangagwa comes from. He is a ZANU-PF person. As you have rightly said, he lost support in Kwekwe, then he moved to Chirumanzo somewhere there. He has no support on the ground. I believe the only excitement that was there was the removal of Mugabe. And if people are just going to pin their hopes on the removal of one person and then say, oh, you are our hero, things are going to be changing now, things are going to be fine for us, we're going to get jobs, we're going to get cash, they are going to get investment in the country. I believe that is a wrongly placed hope in one man who has lost support before, who is part of that Gabau, that ZANU-PF group that has destroyed the country since 1980.
Some analysts are saying that there are broader issues at play. You, as a political analyst, do you have an idea of these broader issues at play?
I'm not quite sure of what broader issues are at play. Probably foreign issues that are at play, that probably, I've heard some quarters saying that probably Mr. Mnangagwa had already been given a go-ahead by foreign forces from the West and from the East. Maybe that's when he brought up this issue during his inauguration of compensating those white farmers with their farms taken. So there could be a possibility that there is a foreign influence in there, that there have been secret talks with people within ZANU-PF, including Mnangagwa himself. From
where is Mr. Mnangagwa going to get the money to compensate these farmers?
There is no way he's going to get that money. Already the economy is suffering. They're already failing to pay the teachers that are already on their payroll. Where are they going to get a huge chunk of the government revenue is going towards salaries for civil servants. Where would that money come from? That brings up a lot of other questions. If you make those promises to white people, where is it going to come from? What are the timelines? Are we just not going to hear promises today? People ululate and make slogans, but then for the next, you win an election next year, you get white support, you get black support. Those black people who think that he's a hero for removing Mugabe, then he wins next year's election. But for the next 5 years, there's no compensation to anyone. We'll just be having excuses. That's the language of ZANU-PF. It's either sanctions, it's either foreign interference. There are always excuses in ZANU-PF. We can never trust them on their word. I don't believe that money will come from anywhere.
That was analyst Tendai Bofana. He was speaking with VOA's Ray Choto.
Some Zimbabwean immigrants who live in neighboring Botswana say they are willing to return home following the swearing-in of a new president in their homeland. Following the inauguration of Emmerson Mnangagwa on Friday, the hopes of an estimated 50,000 Zimbabwean immigrants have been raised. They might go back, but, they say, only if they see real change. Reporter Martin Ngwenya has more from Habarone.
In his address, when he took oath of office in Harare on Friday, Mr. Mnangagwa promised to prioritize the economy and create jobs. This was sweet music to the ears of many Zimbabweans who have endured nearly 2 decades of economic hardships. The new president urged Zimbabweans in the diaspora to return home to rebuild their country. While the change in leadership after 37 years of authoritarian President Robert Mugabe's rule has been hailed across Zimbabwe and beyond, some are still skeptical. Mr. Aaron Moyo, a university graduate who finds himself surviving on odd jobs in Botswana, says in his words, Mr. Mnangagwa is cut from the same cloth as his predecessor and therefore doubts if there will be real reform.
I'm still a bit skeptical about the appointment of Emmerson Mnangagwa to the presidency of Zimbabwe because he's cut from the same cloth as Robert Mugabe. And there are still issues which we need him to address, like the issue of corruption within ZANU-PF. If he's willing to address that, maybe we can go back home. But at the moment, we have to sit back and see what happens.
The 30-year-old Moyo's views have been echoed by other Zimbabweans who feel Mnangagwa's previous involvement with the ruling ZANU-PF party, and particularly as a close ally of Mr. Mugabe, cast doubts on his capability to turn around the fortunes of a resource-rich country. But some are more than willing to give Mr. Mnangagwa the benefit of the doubt to lead the Southern African country out of its political and economic woes. Miss Irene Dube, a Zimbabwean teacher in Harare, was particularly impressed by Mr. Mnangagwa's maiden address as Zimbabwe's president in Harare on Friday. But Dube wants to see more developments in her home province of Matabeleland, which has largely been marginalized since independence in 1980.
As people of Matabeleland, we welcome the newly elected president. Although we feel we've been marginalized for a very long time, and we are hoping this time around Matabeleland will be prioritized in the development programs, so that even us who are in the diaspora, we will consider going back home to work towards the development of our region.
Matabeleland saw the massacre of nearly 20,000 of its own people, predominantly Ndebele under Mugabe's early rule between 1980 and 1987. The region has largely remained marginalized, with its residents opting to vote for the opposition in recent years. Mrs. Sipho Mhlanga arrived in Botswana 6 years back, forced by the deteriorating economic situation back home. But with a new president at the helm, Mhlanga sees this as a perfect opportunity to retrace her steps back home and cast her vote in next year's election, provided there is no repeat of the violence which has been associated with past polls.
As someone who's in the diaspora, we are so hopeful that next year's elections will be free and fair. They will uphold the rule of law. There won't be beating of people or being coerced to vote for people that they don't want. Maybe that way, if the president actually insists on that, then we may put our trust on him.
While there is hope of a turnaround after the departure of long-term ruler Mugabe, who is blamed for the collapse of the country's economy, analysts warn Zimbabwe's economic recovery will not be overnight. The country has no currency of its own, employment is estimated at 90%, and corruption is rampant, forcing millions to leave the country for greener pastures abroad. Reporting for VOA's English to Africa service, this is Martin Ngwenya in Harare, Botswana.
Botswana is highly regarded as a shining example of democracy in Africa. Many analysts have called on African countries to emulate the Botswanan democracy example. The government in Gaborone, led by Serete Kama Iyenkama, has often lashed out against African leaders who stay in power for decades. This, despite strong opposition from citizens who kick against the removal of term limits, which allows the leaders to seek additional terms in office. In part two of reporter Peter Clutie's talks with the leader, President Iyenkama, spoke about the role of the Southern African Community, SADC, and the African Union in entrenching democracy in Africa.
You know, to be honest with you, it's still very much everyone for themselves. We have come up in SADC and with AU very good stated intentions on the issue of democracy. I mean, for that, I give those regional bodies credit for. But when it comes to actually implementing and walking the talk, that's where we haven't really done what we should have done. And that was to speak out when we see there are human rights abuses in countries, there is abandonment of the rule of law, where there may be rigging of elections. Like, you know, even with the issue of the International Criminal Court, when suddenly, you know, I think it was about 35 countries had signed up to the Rome Statute, but then when next leaders are being implicated, suddenly there are all these calls to pull out. So that's where I think, you know, those bodies tend to lose it. And no one really seems prepared to say, look, this is what we signed on for. This is the kind of continent we want to live on. And at the end of the day, we signed on to those things with the express purpose of uplifting the lives of the citizens that we are elected to represent. And when we don't carry out those initiatives we put in place, we're letting ourselves down, we're letting the people we represent down.
Why do you think there's a wave, or there seems to be a trend of African heads of state, because you're an African president, I'm talking to you in the African context, trying to change the constitution? You have a majority in parliament in Botswana. You could have encouraged them to amend the constitution for you to stay in power. You have not done so. Why are your other colleagues doing so, if I may ask you, and what can they learn from the Botswana experience?
I think it's just power hunger. That's the only way to describe it. Because all those countries have many more people than we do in Botswana. They've got populations in there, well into the millions, many millions. And there must be so many other people who are capable of being good leaders. So why they should think that they're the only ones at that time who can continue is beyond me. But I think it's just driven by power. And like I say, the trappings that come with being in office that causes them not to want to. So when they come into office knowing that the constitution says it's a two-term limit, they think, oh, well, 10 years, it's a long time, you know, it won't you know, I'll be around for quite a long time. But the longer you're in office, the more it then becomes difficult to leave. Like I said, that I suppose to a certain extent that may be human nature. They just become entrenched in what they have, and then they then try and alter their constitutions to allow for a third term or a limitless term. But even that third term is going to end one day, and then what do they do? You know, then they're going to then want another term and go on and on and on until you get to a situation like Mugabe, who probably wanted to end his life in office.
Mr. President, what makes the Botswana democracy experience so unique, and what do you think other African countries can learn from the democracy that Botswana has been practicing for years now?
I think we have entrenched democracy in all our institutions and our way of life. Right from the beginning, from day one, that is what we adopted and we saw it through. And successive leaders have continued to build upon that. And I've tried to do the same here as well. And once you have that kind of system entrenched, it then becomes a way of life for anybody, for everybody. And if you try, if there are any inclinations you're trying to divert from the course, you'll be reminded very quickly that no, this isn't what we want for the country. We want to stay on this course that we set for ourselves. And, you know, we reap the benefits of doing that. I mean, we've got challenges like every other country. But by and large, if you're a democracy and you have good governance, you'll be rewarded in terms of, you know, prudent economic management and foreign investment and economic well-being, despite all the challenges that come to economies around the world. And we know that in other democracies, they've also in recent years had their problems with recessions and everything like that. But if you are people-centered, you are bound to succeed.
Mr. President, I understand you plan on leaving power before your term expires. What is the motivation behind it, and what do you plan on doing after you successfully step down and decide to hand over power smoothly?
I'm leaving before the next election. I'm leaving midterm. Is the truth, and that is because in our constitution you either do two terms or 10 years, and my 10 years is up midterm, so I'll be stepping down early next year. And what motivates me, even if we didn't have, to be quite honest with you, even if we didn't have a two-term limit, I would not have wanted to go on beyond two terms or 10 years, because I think, like I said earlier on, every country has got a wealth of people who could be leaders, and other people should come and others should depart. And I see it like that. I think, you know, people want to see new leaders from time to time, and they don't want to see people there forever.
Serete Kama Iyenkama is the president of the Republic of Botswana. He spoke with reporter Peter Cloutey from Habarone.
Zimbabweans took to the street this past week to celebrate the news that longtime leader Robert Mugabe had resigned. Among the cheerful spectators was one South Sudanese student studying at the Harare Institute of Technology, who says the streets of the capital were electric when the announcement was made. Ganiko Bongoye Michael says he too is excited about witnessing history in the making. He says Zimbabwe should take a lesson from South Sudan. The real work of building the country lies ahead and should not be clouded by the current issue of euphoria.
I could feel the joy in the people. Everyone was happy, and you could actually see that people were really waiting for that moment, because once the news broke, you know, I was moving in a certain car, but what happened is that even the people whom I was with in the car, you could just see how happy they were, screaming. Everyone came out of the house, went to the streets, and they were jubilating. I think it was really a historical day for them. They were really very happy.
Have you ever witnessed anything quite like this?
Yeah, I witnessed it back in South Sudan when we got our independence, 2011. We are also screaming that way. We are happy, and everything was just like it was a new beginning. So to them, just like a new beginning, like how I witnessed it back in 2011.
It's remarkable you've been able to witness firsthand two historical events on the continent.
Yeah. I think it's an opportunity for me to witness this, because you never know. When I go back to South Sudan, there will be a time maybe when I will scream again. You never know.
You know, you were only 17 years old when South Sudan got its independence. And since then, a lot has happened in South Sudan. I'm wondering what your advice is to the people of Zimbabwe, being a citizen of South Sudan. What would be your advice to them at this very critical moment?
Yeah, at this moment, I think the only advice probably would be like, yeah, it's time. It's like a stepping stone. They begin with this, but they shouldn't hope that everything's fine. They should now strengthen, like build on how they are going to start on from life from now. How is it going to be? So they need to also be able to, the leaders who are coming, maybe they should be able to take on the stone now. How are they going to roll it? They need to roll it the right way, which the citizens expect. So the jubilation right is there, but they need to foresee this jubilation should continue, meaning that they need to continue. Because what happens is that after jubilation, business resumed on very well today and everyone was happy in the mood. So I think they should keep that spirit, then they'll achieve what they want.
What's your advice to civil society groups and students, even amid the celebrations? What should be their focus right now?
They should be advocating for what they expect. Like if it is education, better education, which they want, these are some of the things they should be telling people who are coming in now, so that these leaders should prioritize them as they come in. Because normally that's what happens. You need to show what you wanted. So I think this is the right time to showcase so that the leaders can prioritize it. I just felt it, how it is to resolve things peacefully. Everyone enjoys. You see the happiness, no gunshot, but you see people, how people enjoy making. It's not. I'm not saying it's a revolution, but with that change, peaceful change. That's what we want in every country in Africa.
That was Ganiko Bangoya Michael speaking to Ayen Bayor from Harare. You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from the Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa in Washington. At 52 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe's momentous political change.
Robert Mugabe's government long suppressed opposition voices and was accused of countless human rights violations. Mnangagwa himself is among those who faces international sanctions for abuse. From Johannesburg, Diwa Mavinga with Human Rights Watch spoke via Skype with our colleague Vincent Makori on what the change in leadership might mean in terms of human rights.
Clearly, Mr. Mnangagwa's speech at his inauguration was focused on the international community, on investments, on business, on the economy, but not so much on reforms, on human rights, and certainly nothing at all on the people who were arrested by the military, detained, beaten up, and tortured between November 14 and today. Human Rights Watch, we have spoken to a number of these individuals, their families, their homes are under military siege as we speak. A number of them are in hiding. Armed soldiers are still going to their homes, ransacking, destroying property, destroying vehicles, beating up people, torturing people, allegedly to find information. But Mr. Mnangagwa has not directly addressed these issues. It shows clearly that this is a continuation of military rule with Mnangagwa now as leader. And he has said next year there will be elections as scheduled, but that is really worrisome because see that there is no change.
Very quickly, I mean, we can say he just became president. Perhaps we can judge him from tomorrow onwards, right?
Well, but he is fully aware of the military positions and what the military has been doing, because he said when he was out of the country, he kept in close contact, and he's aware that there are people who were picked up, a number of people from the other security forces branches, like the Central Intelligence Organization, the CIO. A number of those people were thought to be loyal to Mugabe, and were hunted down, locked up, beaten up, and tortured to disclose what plans were there, what were the sources of financing for the G40 faction, and things like that. And Mnangagwa is fully briefed, but he pretends to the world that perhaps he does not know what's happening. And that is worrisome, because for a fresh start, to make a clean break with Mugabe's legacy, there is need for Mnangagwa to open up. And also, you could tell from his speech that he has no intention, really, to embracing the opposition or to have some kind of coalition government. So we are really business as usual. It's not a fresh start for Zimbabwe.
That was Dior Mavinga in Johannesburg speaking via Skype with VOA's Vincent Macquarie.
The social media is buzzing about who President Emmerson Mnangagwa will pick for his new cabinet. Zimbabweans want one that will help build back the government and make Zimbabwe better. This comes as Mnangagwa has promised citizens that he will hit the ground running and build back relationships with international community. The new cabinet will be announced next week, but in the meantime, here are some comments on social media.
At Tembam Liswa says, ED's cabinet must be a cabinet that attracts investment, that instills confidence among us Zimbabweans, and that instills a confidence to the international community.
Fortuna says, I am for an inclusive cabinet balanced.
Sharon Pete says, and once again, become a tourist mecca, creating jobs and bringing in foreign currency. Zimbabweans are removed from their hospitality.
At T. Maridzikwa says, confidence cannot be gained by recycling the same ministers who failed to deliver for the past 37 years.
At Charles Muvita says, he should have less ministries, not 1,000, which are no benefit to the citizens.
At Mapofu Msonza says, your beloved ED needs to restore the rule of law, no human rights abuse, and good policies. Cabinets don't attract investment. The deep economic crisis stems from internal and external forces.
At DKM Topera says, we are asking you, ZANU-PF, not to pressure Mr. Mnangagwa to choose friends. He must be independent.
At Jenna underscore Simba says, here Comrade ED will either shoot himself in the foot or he'll gain mileage for the next election. The choice is his, remembering that he was not voted into power. And now we leave you with a song by Amara Brown, Achilles.
I'ma give up anything you ask, I deliver. Bending backwards, building your dreams, hoping that you will love me, it seems. Chins, what chins, chaka ipa. Ya, ya, I, ya, tuneta. Rera, imwa, nemu, kata. Ino, fuma, yo, kuruma. Dance, boy, am I a dance? Boy, is this a fake romance? Boy, bang, boy, am I a bank? Boy, am I a ATM? Boy, dance, boy, am I a dance? Boy, is this a fake romance?
That is it for us this evening on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kudzanai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Ndebele broadcast can be heard at 6 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.